For this episode, I am in conversation with Farishta Afzali. Originally from Afghanistan, Farishta grew up mostly in Pakistan, but is currently based in the United States, where she is also seeking asylum. In this episode, we talk about some of her personal experiences living in immigration for the most part of her life, while also touching on the Taliban takeover in Afghanistan and the consequences that came after. From the entire experience talking to her, I found Farishta to be smart, brave, resilient, and with a strong need to speak up for people's rights in her country, especially for women. I hope you can take away something from this conversation like I did. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of A Whole New World, a podcast that started with the sheer purpose of shedding light on unconventional immigrant and expat stories from underrepresented backgrounds. I'm recording today's episode after a long gap from the time I first recorded my first episode, so there has been a lot of changes since then. However, I still hope to bring on stories from all around the world and share it with you all here. So make sure you follow this podcast for new stories to come. Okay, I'm excited for today because we have our first guest with us, and I'm really looking forward to hearing her story in her own words. So without further ado, let's quickly welcome her. Hi, Farishta.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me in today's episode.
Thank you so much for agreeing to share your story. And for the record, did I say your name right? Is it Farishta?
Yes, it is Farishta.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for agreeing to be a guest here. And so I'm really excited to hear your story. And why don't you just go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone?
Absolutely. So I am Farishta Afzali. I come from Afghanistan. I belong to one of the ethnic groups called Hazara. I have lived my life in migration, I would say. For most of my life, I have lived in Pakistan. It was the first time when the Taliban took over Afghanistan, we migrated to Pakistan. And I grew up there. I completed my secondary education. And afterwards, I completed my bachelor's degree in Asian University for Women, which is located in Bangladesh. And then I started my master's program, which is Erasmus Mundus Joint Master's Program in Education Policies for Global Development. But before starting my master's program, I was also working as admissions officer at American University of Afghanistan in Kabul. So that's pretty much about me.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that you were actually in Pakistan. So did you grow up in Afghanistan, and how young were you when you moved to Pakistan?
I was 1 year old when we migrated to Pakistan. I would say that in total, I have lived around 3 years in my country, but mostly outside Afghanistan. It's that I have lived.
Right. So do you identify more as a citizen of Pakistan, or would you still consider yourself an Afghan? Like, how do you relate to the culture?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I would say that sometimes I find myself in identity crisis, to be honest, because part of me feels, you know, belonged to Afghanistan. But given that I have not lived there for like longer time or for several years, part of me feels belong to Pakistan. But meanwhile, another part of me feel belong to Bangladesh because I lived there for 5 years. So it's like a little bit of me in all over the countries that I have lived, you know, throughout my life.
Yeah.
And I also have like, yeah, I also feel strongly about the ethnic group that I come from. And of course, throughout the conversation, I will talk about that too. So my identity as a Hazara girl.
Okay, yeah, that is really interesting that you grew up in all these countries and you identify with so many cultures, because it's pretty interesting. It sounds interesting to me because I've been born and brought up in one single country, and I wanted to live in different parts of the world. But I understand when you say that you feel an identity crisis, because I can see that happening when you live in different cultures. But I think, I'm not really sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like a lot of the culture, there are lot of similarities, I feel, between these three culture, right? So do you think that there is something that is like very common in between these three cultures that you were in?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that, the hospitality towards the guests that I have experienced in Pakistan and being in Bangladesh and in my own country as well, like, you know, our hospitality is famous in the world for how we serve people, for the guests or the people, new people that come to our country. We welcome them wholeheartedly. And I would also say that apart from that, there are some other like common things that we see. Of course, I would say that even if there is diversity, because every culture has its own unique, you know, norms or things or practices, but meanwhile, there are things similar that connects us. And especially like me growing up in Quetta, Pakistan, because there were already Hazaras living. So I, of course, did see similarities, but at the same time, differences when I went back to Afghanistan and kind of realized that, oh, it's interesting how, like, you know, the same people from coming from the same ethnic group, but living in a different country, how cultures of that, those countries or communities also impact, or how they, let's say, celebrate their wedding ceremonies, or how they are having their like happy moments, the way they dress up, the way they speak, and especially when it comes to language, I would say sometimes even I also had these challenges when I went back to my country. It was hard for me to speak in my own, you know, Persian language. Because growing up in Pakistan, I had developed a different accent. So like learning Urdu language, learning English language. So it's also mixed up with me learning my own language. But of course, being in that environment, I didn't have that exposure to always communicate in Persian language. So when I came to Afghanistan, it was hard for some time for people to exactly understand my accent. And it took me some time.
Yeah, that's really nice that you brought it up, because my next question was going to be about the languages, because I'm curious what languages you speak. And I understand that because you have been in Pakistan, you definitely speak Urdu. And I do understand Urdu because I think it's very similar to Hindi. And although I'm from Nepal, so I mean, I understand Hindi pretty well. So I think it's something that I can resemble to as well. And obviously, the things that you said about South Asian culture, I think because Afghanistan is also a South Asian country, and so is Pakistan. I think there is a lot of similarity in hospitality and the way we treat our guests. So I can totally understand that. So I'm curious about the languages you speak. And I know I read the book Thousand Splendid Sons by Khalid Hosseini, and I think I learned from there, like learned a lot about Afghanistan as a country when I read that book. And so I do know that there is this language called Pashto. I don't know if it's the same as Persian. So what are the languages you speak, and can you just explain a little bit about those languages?
Absolutely, yeah. So, okay, if I say overall, I speak three languages, which is, of course, Dari, our national language. Mm-hmm. We have two national languages. One is Pashto and one is Dari. But Dari is like widely spoken, because Pashto is mainly spoken by one ethnic group, whereas Dari is spoken by many other ethnic groups in the country. And apart from that, I speak English and I also speak Urdu. So three languages, but also because of, like, you know, my lived experiences in other parts, I also can read Arabic because I'm a Muslim girl, right? So I can read Arabic, but I don't necessarily understand it. I also understand a little bit of Bangla language because I lived in Bangladesh. In regards to Pashto language, I understand Pashto language, but I cannot communicate it properly. So it's a little bit of like all other languages, like Turkish language, a little bit, like, you know, very few words that I understand. It was a little hard for me to learn Turkish language. Also, I was not there for a long time.
That's very impressive. I feel like there is a lot of overlap within these languages as well. And I think Arabic is definitely on my list of languages that I want to learn. And it's very hard. Like right now, I tried to learn a few words, but it just felt it was really hard for me to spell some words. So it's on my list, but I don't know when I'm going to get to that. Anyways, yeah, but that's so exciting that you speak all these languages and you've been in so many countries. So I think my next question for you would be, and so as I mentioned, when I read A Thousand Splendid Suns by Khaled Hosseini, I think that was when I got a deeper insight into the culture and life of people in Afghanistan. And so I sort of grew an emotional attachment with the situation. Like, he obviously, it's a fiction story and it's not real, but it definitely resembles the, you know, the things that happened in Afghanistan when the Taliban ruled over, and the what it meant for women and children and families. And so just reading about all that, it just definitely takes you on a journey. And I just grew a sort of an emotional attachment to the story and everything. And so I tried researching and I looked up the situation in Afghanistan after that. And I because this book ended on a good note, on a positive note, and that everything ended well and the Taliban rule was over and Afghanistan was doing much better. So when I went to research, I found that Afghanistan was doing better and in like political as well as its situation. And again, like, this news broke of Taliban ruling over last year, and I think it was August 2021. And again, like, I felt really bad for the whole thing that happened. So I just wanted to know, understand your perspective. Like, what is your perspective on everything that's been happening in the country? And I think that also raises a question as to why did you move from Afghanistan to Pakistan in the first place? Was it because of the Taliban regime to escape that, or was it for something else?
Yeah, absolutely. That's such an important question. Thank you for asking it. Of course, like, you know, whenever I have communicated with my parents, trying to understand the reason why my parents in the very first place migrated to Pakistan was because they were so much frightened. You know, when the Taliban first took control of Afghanistan, everybody was so much frightened and they were trying to find ways to escape the country. And for my parents, it was Pakistan, because that's like, we share border with Pakistan. So they left everything behind and they went there just to have a safe life. And it's not easy leaving your dreams behind, leaving your relatives behind, and living, like, you know, the life that you built in your own country, living all of those behind, is starting life from scratch. So it was really difficult. And life in migration in Pakistan was also very challenging, because, of course, my parents both together, they had to work so hard making sure that my sister, you know, and I are having the opportunity to get education. Just imagine, like, when we are living in migration, it's like those kind of situation or circumstances when one has to earn money to be able to have, like, a good life, or at least the necessities that they need. But for my parents, I would say that I am so grateful that they worked hard making sure that we also have the educational opportunities, that though it was not hard not having the documents there, right, to be able to, like, get admission in Pakistani medium school. But I am grateful that they did have a school, at least in that neighborhood, to go there and learn, like, Persian language. And when I came to know about, like, of course, the second time when the Taliban took power, it was so heartbreaking. I remember I was at that time in Turkey, and I just went to Turkey to meet my parents. And my parents, thankfully, they had already left the country, but not with the purpose of, like, leaving the country. They just came in Turkey for some time, not knowing what will happen. But I am grateful that they were safe at that time, and things changed so rapidly. And my heart was totally broken seeing that, like, after 20 years, you know, of hard gain, like, women's having their right and so much development that happened for women having, like, their say and voice in different sectors, political, social, economic, being in parliament, and in any other, like, government sectors and social life, they did have a say. Of course, I don't want to ignore the fact that they were having their challenges, but pretty much there was success and there was a space for women to flourish and to share their ideas and to be part of, like, you know, the country and to be part of prosperity of the country. But when the Taliban came, everything kind of vanished. And right now, the situation of the country is really bad. There is a humanitarian crisis. Women are having the worst of, you know, their time. They are not having the right to work. They don't have the right to get education. Like for secondary education, girls in secondary education, their education is banned. It's more than a year now. They are just like hopeless. They have no idea when the schools will reopen for them. The education system has fallen. Economy has collapsed. And women are being controlled from every aspect. Like their clothing is controlled, their work, they cannot travel alone. So it truly breaks my heart just knowing where we were and where we are right now.
Yeah, that's what exactly I felt too. That's really unfortunate because I think I read that book in 2020 and I was so glad that things were better now and that Afghanistan was doing so much better than it was in the past, in the years where the Taliban regime was still on. And so just knowing that this is happening again, it was terrible. I think terrible to learn about because, you know, I had sort of grew an attachment towards the story and the culture over there. And so, it's such a heartbreaking thing that, you know, the country is going through that again. And I really feel for the people that are still there and the families that are suffering, especially the women that have to go through such harsh rules that are made for them, which is it's just crazy to even understand. Mm-hmm. And so I absolutely understand that. You said that your family is in Turkey, right? So do they plan on being there for a certain time or are they looking to stay there for it?
So, okay, with my parents, it's a little hard. Of course, they don't have any option going back to the country, right? Because we are fearful of my parents being tortured by the Taliban members, given that we also come from ethnic group like called Hazara, who are going through a lot of persecution and who have gone through persecution for many years in Afghanistan. So I would say there are like, you know, genocidal acts happening towards Hazara community in Afghanistan right now. So that's why it's very hard for my parents to even imagine going back. And in Turkey as well, they are on short-term residence permit. So there is uncertainty with what will happen to them, whether the government of Turkey will extend their permit. We have no idea. We have no clue what's going to happen next.
Yeah, that is really a distressful situation. And so when you said Hazara community and the persecution, I have no idea about this. Can you explain what that is? Why is there are there like different ethnic communities within Afghanistan? Like, and can you explain more about this ethnic group that you're talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Afghanistan is a land of ethnic minorities, and Hazara is one of those ethnic groups. As I mentioned earlier, that I also come from Hazara ethnic group. And when I mentioned about persecution for many years, like late in 1980s, 1890s, when one of the king known as King Abdul Rahman Khan, when he was in power, he had a decree towards his army, you know, to persecute Hazaras. And in that time, over 60% of Hazaras were either killed or they were forced to leave their country. And that's when the wave of migration started towards Iran and towards Pakistan. And there have been like targeted and systematic killing towards Hazara ethnic group. And Hazaras, especially in Kabul, they mainly reside in west of Kabul, which is known as Dasht-e-Barchi. And I also would like to refer to the very recent targeted killing towards the Hazara community, which was on 30 September, where the girls, you know, in educational institution, which is Koch Education Center, they were preparing for university entrance exam when these bomb blasts occurred and more than 57 Hazara girls lost their lives. Like, it was mainly Hazara girls. and more than 100 they have been injured. So these, you know, these Hazara families are still mourning the lost lives. So this is just one example of the targeted attacks. But throughout the years, Hazaras have been targeted in maternity ward, wedding ceremonies, markets, educational institutions, literally everywhere, just because they are Hazara and just because we look in a certain way, like our Asiatic feature makes it very easy to be targeted. And also our religious belief, because we are predominantly Shia Muslims, and Pakistan and Afghanistan is like mainly around 80 to 85% makeup of like Sunni Muslim groups. And it's the extremist groups coming from Sunni, those who are targeting. And it's mainly either the Taliban members or the ISIs who are targeting Hazaras.
That makes sense. I think I know a little bit about the Shia versus Sunni Muslim conflict. And I think, so it, I guess it all stems down like to religion. And I think that's where the conflict comes from, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would like to add that it's very unfortunate that, you know, it's like, it's the Taliban members or the ISIS members who have radicalized, you know, their members, and they are using religion as a tool for their political means. Other than that, if I talk about the ethnic groups in Afghanistan, like they have, you know, lived peacefully for many years, but it is these extremist groups who are trying to divide the nation, or who are trying to do something that will, like, you know, separate the or take away the diversity within the country and try to create chaos and conflict.
Yeah, I think it's always like a certain group of people, and it's not the whole group of people.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's just like a couple of people who feel that their religion or their belief system is a little bit supreme as compared to the other one, which is really unfortunate. And it's just something that is, it's hard to understand at this day and age, but I guess that is what it is. But I'm so glad you explained that. And I definitely really appreciate you opening up about everything and your family situation. I think I really hope it gets better, and that that situation gets better. I don't know what the future holds for Afghanistan. I can't really tell, but I hope that everything goes well. And hopefully there will be justice one day, and things should be better. Anyways, I really want to steer away from that and move to your story more. I just wanted to know, like, when did you move to the States? You're currently living in the United States, right? So why don't you just talk about when did you move here? Why did you decide to move here? And what does the life look like for you right now?
Yeah, so it was in July. I came through a leadership program, which is Hanson Leadership Institute. I was selected, or I would say shortlisted, for this program 2 years back. But because of COVID, we were not able to make it in person. And finally, this year in July, we were able to come in person and have this program in San Diego. So that was amazing. 3 weeks of leadership program. I had one of the best experiences learning about leadership, international cooperation, mediation. And right before the program, I was in Turkey. So I came from Turkey here. But of course, because I earlier mentioned to you about the situation in my country, and given that I'm at risk, somebody who always, you know, talks against the Taliban's mentality and ideology and what they are doing towards the women in Afghanistan, I feel threatened, and I cannot imagine myself going back. So that's the reason why I decided to seek asylum here in the U.S. And currently I am in Cedar Falls, Iowa. And I feel grateful that I am in a safe place right now. And I also feel grateful that I know the language where I am living. Mm-hmm.
That is, yeah, that's great. And I'm always curious about people transitioning to as immigrants and coming to a new country and a new culture that is obviously not the same as theirs. And I came like 5 years ago. It's been a while that I'm here now, and it certainly has been a roller coaster ride. But you're freshly new, but and there's definitely a lot more for you to experience. But so far, like, how are you finding the culture? Has there been any cultural shock moments for you since the time that you have come here? Is there anything that you do not like about US? Is there something that you really like about the US? So why don't you just give a little bit of your experience so far being in the States?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, the fact that like I have not been here for a longer time, but of course there are some of the things that I have kind of seen and experienced. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about that. So I would say one of the cultural shock for me was when I came to Cedar Falls mainly. I saw that transportation system was like not really good, in a sense that I kind of expected that, like, you know, there will be public transportation.
Right,
but given
yeah.
that everybody has car in this city.
Our car, yeah.
Yeah. So there is no, I think there is no need for them to have like public transportation, mm-hmm. but at least for those international students who come here to study or let's say exchange programs, I think it's very hard for them to be able to like, you know, roam around the city or at least have their like groceries or anything that they
yeah.
need. So at that moment, they always had to ask somebody from the locals to give them a ride. So that was a cultural
right.
shock for me because I didn't expect the transportation system not to be like available here. And of course,
yeah.
I would also add that like United States is such a diverse country. Like in every state, like, you know, you will find different
yeah.
things. So I am talking about the place where I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think apart from that, something that I learned was also a cultural shock for me that like at certain stage, especially like, let's say 18, 19 or 20, like when someone reaches to that age, like they have
yeah.
to start their own individual life, literally mm-hmm. leave the house, right? And start their individual
yeah.
life. It was shocking
yeah.
for me because the culture that I come from, like we are encouraged to stay within the family.
With your parents.
Yeah,
yeah.
Our interest, you know, our family's interest comes before our interest. So it's more
yeah.
of a collective life. And the especially for male, I would say for boys, it's kind of compulsory, you know, to be with their parents. Because even when they get
right.
married, like they had to, mm-hmm. in a way, provide the services or support to their parents. Or at least even if they choose to go to a different place, but they still have that like shared life and they make sure they're taking care of their family members or even other siblings, those who are not married
yeah.
or those who are like younger, like providing them like financial support. But it was very
mm-hmm.
different and it was interesting and a cultural shock for
yeah.
me. But of
yeah,
course, meanwhile, I would like to emphasize as well that it was also very important to, you know, give that independency to the children so that they
Absolutely.
Go through the challenges and they become like independent individuals and then know how to deal with challenges. So it has,
yeah.
of course, both, I would say, good and bad aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, you know, going back to how my culture is, like, I feel that at the same time when the children are there to support family members, but they should have the freedom as well to start their own individual life so that they know like what is it, what
yeah.
is life and how to handle those challenges, not being completely dependent towards their families.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with those things. And you're so right about the transportation. I think when I first came here, I expected that, you know, the public transportations would be more available, but it's not the case. But luckily, I was in a more a bigger city, so there was a more availability of public transport. But I've been in states where there's absolutely not a lot of options when it comes to public transportation. So this is something that I really do not like personally as well, because I would rather just use public transportation more than trying to drive. But yeah, it's like everybody must get a car when they move to the States, and especially in areas where there are less public transports. And I also agree about the part that, you know, that US is such an individualistic culture, and like, yeah, people are supposed to move out by a certain age, and that is not a thing back home, even for us. Like, we are supposed to stay with our parents, not for the women. I think they get married and move to their husband's
mm-hmm.
houses, but for, I think, men, they stay a little bit longer with their parents, and they're supposed to take care, and it's the same for us as well. So, yeah, I think that can be quite a cultural difference. But Yeah, I think that's definitely something that I think a lot of people experience when they come here.
True.
Anyway, so I definitely want to learn about the food that you grew up eating a lot, I guess, like because you've been in Pakistan. So I think a lot of food that you ate would be Pakistani food. So what, how would you explain, like, what did you eat most growing up? Did your parents make any Afghani cuisines at home, or what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so oh my God, I miss food so much now, like homemade food. Growing up in Pakistan, I would say definitely biryani is one of those foods that we would mainly eat, and I love biryani and the way, like, you know, it's made and prepared in Pakistan or the community that we were living. It was very different. Like, it was very spicy, and especially like chicken biryani and mutton biryani was my favorite. And it was like, you know, served in different occasions or celebrations. And apart from that, like, also I loved chana masala, like, you know, the chickpeas, which is made with the masalas and other ingredients. But if I talk about like our own Afghan food, there are a few of the food, like, which is first of all mantu, which is a dumpling, and that is, you know, with the spiced meat filling and also seasoned like yogurt on top of it. So it's tucked away in a like tender wrapper, and it's just so yum. And of course, like, people can be very creative in that. Sometimes it's mainly made out of, like, you know, beef, but the filling can also be something vegetable if some people do not want to have meat inside. And apart from that, it's also bolani, and the bolani is also, you know, it's a homemade dough. It's stuffed with potato, green onions, cilantro, and then we fry it like so that it becomes crispy and, like, you know, have that golden brown perfection to it. So it's so
It's
yum.
kind of
Yes. Very similar
Yeah.
to that, but just the feeling is different. So I really
Different.
miss this food, and these food are very special.
Yeah, that's great to know. I think, I don't know, is like Afghani food more similar to Middle Eastern cuisine, or would you say that it's more like similar to Pakistani, or maybe like more South Asian food?
I would say, like, it's mixed of, like, you know, Indian subcontinent, also, like, you know, kind of influenced by, you know, Turkic food as well, Mediterranean. So it's like, and also we have our own unique food as well. Like, if I start talking about, like, the food and the diverse food that we have in our country, like, it's huge. A list is like huge, because as I mentioned earlier, like, it's a land of ethnic, you know, groups. So each group has their own like unique food. So it just become like a lot, whole a lot of different
A
food,
lot of food,
delicious
a lot
food.
of good food.
Yeah.
I can imagine. But yeah, I think that's great. I definitely read a little bit about it, I think on the book, the same book, and I don't know a whole lot, but that's really good to know that there are many options there as well.
Yeah.
What is one message that you want people to know about? I don't know, about Afghanistan or whatever is happening there right now, or what do you think people should take away from everything that's been happening, and from for people who are listening to this podcast, what message do you want to finally give to people?
Okay, first of all, I would say to all the people who are listening to this podcast that Afghanistan has a very rich culture. You know, it's diverse. We have beautiful culture. So just do not rely on mainstream media, which only focuses on the negative and, you know, bad news about Afghanistan. Like, if you have friends from Afghanistan, try to communicate with them and try to learn about, like, the beauty of our culture, the rich, like, you know, poetry that we have, the food that we have, and many other things, like, you know, the rich music that we have. Because I would say that, yeah, the mainstream media has mainly portrayed, like, the negative things about Afghanistan. So, like, many people that I have encountered, they have this negative, like, perception about Afghanistan, but Afghanistan is much more than that. It's a beautiful country, and as I mentioned, many other things. And beside that, of course, like, it's so sad that right now, like, our country is in a crisis, that women have do not have their right to work, you know, those basic right to work, right to education, right to travel, no movement, literally everything is controlled by the Taliban members. So, and at the same time, as I also mentioned, that is unfortunately for the Hazara ethnic group and other minorities, they are going through a lot of discrimination, and for Hazaras, like, targeted killings. So I would say that it's our responsibility as human beings. It's our responsibility to not, you know, just consider this as Afghanistan's problem. But as human beings, I think we have to stand, like, in solidarity with the women of Afghanistan and try to amplify their voices, try to stand for their rights, because Afghanistan is right now the only country in the world which has banned secondary education. I cannot even understand that, right? The mentality that they have. So people have to do in any way, like, support Afghans if they are in their countries, and try to, like, provide financial means if they are refugees to their neighboring countries or to the communities that they live. Try to understand, like, you know, the trauma they are going through right now, coming from, like, different ethnic groups. And at the same time, like, especially I would say that, like, every life matters. So for Hazaras that they are going through this genocide right now, it is the responsibility of the world and international community to put an end to this genocide and take, you know, measures. And I think on top of that, of course, like, I really hope that the world does not recognize Taliban's government and we get to go back to our country and serve. Because everybody deserves to have a dignified life and everybody deserves to live in peace.
Absolutely.
That and have their fundamental rights.
Absolutely. I think I totally agree with whatever you things that you said. And I think, yeah, it is not just, like, Afghanistan's problem. As you said, it's become more of a humanitarian crisis. And I think everyone in their own ways should be able to feel empathize with the situation and support in whatever ways they can. Thank you so much for sharing that. And it's really beautiful. And I absolutely agree when, you know, Afghanistan is more than what's just been happening right now. There's such rich culture. And from my understanding, I think there's much more to explore about the country than just one particular aspect that's displayed on the media.
One of the things that I really miss about my country is, you know, I was part of the cycling group, especially when the COVID hit the country. We tried to promote the culture of cycling for girls, because in my country, of course, I would say that women do not necessarily have the privilege to do everything that they want to, that the freedom because of the patriarchal society. So we were promoting, like, cycling for girls mainly, and the group started from 5 people to, it was, you know, more than 100 members. And we were going for cycling every, like, 3 or 2 a week in different parts of Afghanistan. That was such a peaceful feeling and such rewarding feeling for all of us, because we started to see that girls were joining that group. And then we also even saw that girls were trying to go through cycling to their schools or, you know, to their work. And it makes me so sad that it's not happening anymore. And beside that, like, I was also one of the members, like, board members of Rahila Foundation. Rahila herself, unfortunately, lost her life in a terrorist attack which occurred in 2018 with her classmates while they were studying. So as in honor or to pay tribute to Rahila, her brother started this foundation and library, Rahila Foundation, and we had these library facilities for the people coming from underserved community, particularly, or those who were not able to afford books, to come there, have a platform to read books, prepare themselves for college exam or university exam. And now it breaks my heart just not being able to provide those services anymore, like those capacity building programs, having those sessions with those like members. And now they are scattered in different parts of the country and also in Pakistan. So I really, really hope that, like, that day comes soon when we are actually able to go back to our country and have all those sessions in person and being able to serve these members Yeah, because I'm truly passionate about women's education, about their right, and I will try my best to do anything to advocate for the right of Afghan women and for the right of the people coming from Hazara ethnic group.
Thanks so much for sharing that. I think that's really wonderful to know that people like you still exist, that still believe in fighting for their rights and in their community. And it just makes it feel like there's still light at the end of the tunnel. And I really hope that justice prevails and Afghanistan can rise up again.
So one last thing I would like you to do is to teach us something in any language you want, maybe the language that you speak back home, or Urdu, or anything that you think is like one word or one sentence or anything that you think is beautiful for you to hear, or maybe that you want to teach us. So if you could just teach us any language, any word in any language that you want, it would be really great.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so one of the words that I would like to kind of teach is sulha, like, and that sulha means peace. Yeah, which is like in Urdu, that we say aman. So,
right.
Yeah, why I want to teach this word, because it has such a deep meaning, of course, for everybody, I would say, but somebody, you know, who has experienced like the trauma of war for many years, even if I had not lived in my country experiencing war, but I have experienced like moments or situations where, like, you know, there was bomb blast or many like attacks, targeted killings. So my dream is like a peaceful world, you know, where everybody has like that peace,
yeah,
to live, like, you know, having peace of mind, having not to worry about, like, mm-hmm, let's say going outside whenever they want to, doing the things that they love to do, like be it riding a bicycle, be it driving a,
yeah,
car, and gender like should not be a problem. So I hope,
yeah,
for that around
That's
the
really
world.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I really hope that for people who are listening, if you are an Afghan immigrant anywhere in the world, and I think if you find any solace in this message, I really hope this was able to give you some sort of relief. And thank you so much, Farishta, for speaking to me today. It was such a pleasure talking to you and just getting to know about Afghanistan's culture. Your story and everything that you're doing seems amazing. I really hope that you are able to make some difference and whatever with the work that you are doing. But yeah, I think I'm really glad that you decided to agreed to come to my podcast today and be my first ever guest. But yeah, I really enjoyed speaking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It was a great pleasure being here and, you know, having the chance to talk about my culture and my
absolutely
identity.
I'm really glad that you are here. Anyways, for those who are listening, please make sure that you follow this podcast. Give this episode a rating if you like this at all. And don't forget to share it with your friends. But definitely come back for more, because I have more stories to bring to the world. So until next time, take care. Bye.